Support for Living on Earth comes from listeners like you. Please make a donation online at loe.org or call me at 617-629-3638. And thanks.
It's Living on Earth. I'm Jeff Young. In the southeast corner of Montana, on the isolated Northern Cheyenne Reservation, live some of the most determined and successful environmentalists you've never heard of. Over the past four decades, the Cheyenne fought powerful energy interests and the federal government to keep the tribe's vast coal deposits from being mined. They've adopted some of the country's strictest air and water quality standards, but they've had less success dealing with chronic unemployment and substance abuse. Now, a new tribal president is pushing coal as a way out of poverty, as Daniel Crocker reports.
Jay Littlewolf's mud-caked pickup careens up the rutted road to Badger Peak, the highest point on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation. At the summit is one of the more visible signs of his people's long fight to preserve their environment. Little Wolf opens the door to one of the tribe's three air quality monitoring stations.
To basically all three sites monitor for SO2, NOx, NO, NO2.
Inside the tiny trailer, air analyzers hum as they measure tiny amounts of the pollutants. Outside, Little Wolf points north, where 16 miles away, four smokestacks puff wisps of smoke into the bright blue sky.
But with that plume from Coal's trip, no matter what time of the year, you can see it. Usually in the morning, you can see a brown haze in the sky there, and that's nitrogen dioxide.
Colstrip is Montana's largest coal plant. It cranks out over 2,000 megawatts of electricity. When the plant's owners wanted to expand in the 1970s, the Northern Cheyenne fought back. They became the first government to voluntarily adopt the strictest air quality standard, a Class 1 airshed the same as national parks. The tribe used its new leverage to force the coal plant's owners to install state-of-the-art pollution scrubbers and to pay for the tribe's air monitors. Back inside, Little Wolf turns on a computer to show me the data he's collecting.
We still get low numbers, but we measure and report in parts per billion. So we're still being impacted because Class 1 has a very small increment, so it doesn't take much to impact us.
Over the years, the tribe has used its stringent air quality standards to stop proposed mines and power plants beyond the reservation, too. But now this reservation is an island. Five major strip mines surround it. There's a new power plant 60 miles west, hundreds of natural gas wells to the south, and two proposed plants to convert coal to diesel. Many people here say it's time for the Northern Cheyenne to also join in the coal boom before it's too late.
Okay, my name's Leroy Spang. I was recently elected president of Northern Cheyenne Tribe.
Spang worked for three decades as a miner in Colstrip before retiring 3 years ago. Coal is what he knows, and it's what he campaigned on.
I run my platform, but it's more or less coal. I guess there's a lot of people was backing me for that coal. That's how I got in.
2 years ago, after decades of fierce opposition, tribal members finally said yes to developing their coal resources in a special referendum. There's an amazing amount of coal here, billions of tons under practically every inch of the reservation, part of a rich belt that stretches into Wyoming. Eugene Limpy, a former tribal vice president and Spang supporter, says there's enough to support generations of his people.
And the revenue that would come from that coal, it will address our needs for money for education, housing, for all our people, and a retirement fund when people reach elderly age.
Limpy seems unconcerned that elsewhere in the country, some are turning away from coal because of its carbon emissions.
It might seem way out far, but they're going to find a technique to turn that coal into some type of energy, maybe atomic fuel. Technology is always coming up with something to use the resources underneath.
And Limpy says those resources could provide jobs on a reservation where the unemployment rate is about 70% and the median income only half the national average. Limpy has a good job working for the tribal government, but he says the poverty affects everyone.
And that includes me. I have 17 people living in my home. I keep 7 of my grandchildren. There's no housing. We can't afford to buy a house.
But both Limpy and Spang acknowledge the Cheyenne's own environmental laws could be a roadblock.
It costs money for the companies to comply with the High Standard of Clean Air Act that the tribe won in the U.S. Supreme Court.
Would there be any consideration of lowering that air quality standard?
The question clearly makes Spang uncomfortable. He holds his hand up to signal he doesn't want to answer.
Yeah, we're driving down Lame Deer, Montana, Cheyenne Avenue. We even have a four-way stop downtown. What you see here is like dirt world conditions.
Philip Whiteman Jr. cruises the tribal capital's main drag. Not much more than a gas station, cafe, and some boarded-up storefronts. Whiteman is one of the most vocal opponents of coal development.
There's a lot of people think that the industrial culture, the gas, the coal, all of that is going to bring in money, jobs, and then plus, they even promised dollar store.
He gestures out the window as we drive north out of Lame Deer, past horses grazing in rolling pastures.
Look at this beauty of this land. It's priceless. Substitute it for a dollar store. That's what our people are faced with today.
Whiteman's taking me to one of his people's most sacred sites, Medicine Deer Rock. It's where the famous Chief Sitting Bull led Cheyenne and Sioux warriors in a sun dance before the Battle of Little Bighorn, where General George Custer was killed. It was a defeat that shocked America, but the victory was short-lived for the Cheyenne. They surrendered less than a year later.
Oh, bless myself with Mother Earth. Open the tobacco in the four sacred directions. Lift down the wall, sit to a hat. Hit a mock made down a bit, sit to what made down a bit, I done it a made down a bit. Heal it, get down there. My heinous tear.
Whiteman finishes his prayer and leads me around the rock. It's lined with huge pictograph panels, like a giant stone art gallery. One image depicts the vision Sitting Bull had before the battle of Custer's soldiers dying like insects.
And look at the soldiers falling into the camp like locusts. They got grasshopper legs.
Around the rock, people have tied bright prayer cloths to trees. Others have left offerings of food. Whiteman believes the fight against coal is just the latest battle for his people, who still refer to themselves as the Fighting Cheyenne.
We believe that we're still fighting in many ways to preserve and protect our language, culture, and our identity, and submitting to the exploitation of our land, what little land that we have left would be devastating to our future generations.
For those Northern Cheyenne who oppose coal mining, it invariably comes back to wanting to protect the land their ancestors fought so hard for. Shortly after the tribe, in defeat, was forcibly moved to a fort in Nebraska, they broke out, and in the dead of a frigid winter, trekked hundreds of miles back here.
There are a lot of people who did make a grave sacrifice.
Ben Lone Bear, only 29 years old, is the tribe's treasurer.
And I think the rationale behind not developing those resources is based on the respect for those things. And that tearing up our land that was fought for and died for really, really, really hits home with some people.
But Lone Bear also knows the hardship of living in a place where there's practically no economy.
From the treasurer's standpoint, I believe about 85, maybe 90% of the money that comes into the tribe comes in the form of assistance from the federal government.
To become more self-sufficient, Lone Bear doesn't rule out coal, but he believes the tribe should explore renewables first. The Department of Energy says there is enormous wind potential on the reservation, and that's the route local environmentalists, like Alexis Bonagovsky with the National Wildlife Federation, are urging the tribe to take.
It's a false choice that they're being presented with. And to be backed up against the wall and say, you have to develop your minerals or else you're going to remain in poverty, it's a horrible position to be in.
But there may be something even more fundamental at stake for many northern Cheyenne than whether they mine their coal or leave it in the ground or even build wind turbines. For people like Ben Lone Bear, the key is cultural survival, not economic prosperity. If the tribe loses its language and ceremonies, he says with sadness, then they become just regular Americans like everyone else. For Living on Earth, I'm Daniel Crocker in Lame Deer, Montana.